CFO Radio is the only radio show that explores the passion of today's CFO and examines the innermost thoughts of the financial world, financial perspectives for today. Welcome to CFO Radio. I'm Lorraine Chilvers. Lee, would you like to introduce our sponsors?
Absolutely. Today's show is brought to you by Delaney Consulting, LLC, providing financial leadership to fast-growing companies, interim management, consulting services, and executive placement for the finance function. Visit DelaneyLLC.com and learn why 100% clients describe Delaney's as outstanding and excellent. Also, SAP Business by Design, a fully integrated business management software solution designed for small to mid-sized companies that want the benefits of large-scale business applications without the need for a large IT infrastructure.
This week's CFO News. This month, Chief Executive Magazine detailed its annual survey of best and worst states in which to do business. This was conducted earlier in January 2010. They asked over 600 CEOs across the U.S. to draw upon their direct experience and to rate each state in three general categories: taxation and regulation, quality of workforce, and living environment. The CEOs gave Texas top honors, closely followed by North Carolina, Tennessee, and Virginia as the best states in which to do business. They gave the booby prize, I'm afraid, to worst state, to California, with New York, Michigan, New Jersey, and Massachusetts filling out the bottom five. A lineup that was virtually unchanged from last year. Worthy of note, Florida and Georgia remain in the top 10, along with newcomer Utah. Well, today we are interviewing Brent Walters. He joins us today to discuss the role of the CFO. Welcome to the show, Brent.
Thank you very much.
You're CFO at One Vision Solutions, Inc., and previously you were with Tatum LLC, DHL Global Forwarding, and you were also earlier in your career CFO for Pitts and Spitz and CFO for Procurement Logistics International. Plus, you've also had some roles as a consultant. Brent, tell us about your background and why you chose the path to CFO today.
No problem. I feel pretty fortunate with my background that I've been able to move through the ranks relatively quickly in my career. I contribute that partially to when I first got out of college with a finance degree, I was able to get in with a fairly small company called Procurement Logistics International. And in small companies, as many people realize real quick, you don't only play the role of CFO, controller, AP collections, and so forth, but you're also the coffee maker as well. So I attribute that to my understanding of overall business processes, because you're able to get in to the thick of it, deal with the operational aspects, collaborate with multiple lines of the management within the organization, and see how it all entails and works together with the finance and accounting perspective.
And you've also had a lot of background in the realm of logistics and movement of goods and goods among the world, I guess.
Definitely, which is actually very interesting, because by getting into logistics, we would actually hire ships and get into cost accounting for actually oil rig movements, and you'd purchase a ship and essentially rent it, I guess, for a period of time, and also fill the cargo up. So you're working through all sorts of different cost and revenue models and forecasting as to how much money you're actually going to make on a deal like that. So the logistics aspect's always been very interesting to me. From my procurement logistics experience, it definitely became a very good fit for me to go into DHL Global Forwarding at the corporate office in Florida. That role was more of a corporate overhead controller, and I was responsible for all of North America.
Is there anything specific to the finance function for logistics for those listeners today that are potentially considering maybe a career? Is logistics a good one to learn the whole realm of accounting and finance?
I don't know if I'd necessarily pigeonhole it into the logistics or not. It was just kind of a path that I went down. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Accounting and finance in today's world is, I guess in my opinion, a widget's a widget. when you come right down to it. And really, just the transactional processes of accounting and finance is only one portion of what a CFO does these days.
So talk to us a little bit about some of the other realms. What else rolls into that CFO role?
I have found myself more of a holistic leader and a partner with the different business lines within the organization. The CEOs or the co-partner or co-owners of One Vision Solutions draw upon me for strategy and execution of the strategy for where we want to take the business going forward.
And is it, as you started out your career, did you consider that you would so quickly emerge into that strategic role? Was it something where your passion was always there?
I would say that my passion's always pretty much been in the business management and the strategy philosophy. I really enjoyed building the models and adhering to the models and leading down the path. Now, obviously, you build a model, that doesn't mean it's concrete. There's definitely a fluid dynamic approach that goes along with business demands and what the competition is doing, not to mention regulation and what investors want. Now, fortunately, with One Vision Solutions, we don't have any outside investors, so we don't have that outside pressure that a lot of companies have these days. But there's definitely regulation and a moving environment based on what our competition and what our vendors are doing.
I understand. Now, because of the roles that you've served in quite a few different companies before you reached that CFO role that you're in today. Describe to us the lessons that you have learned with the transition from that first entry, if you will, junior accountant, to the CFO today.
Definitely. As I kind of mentioned with Procurement Logistics International, I played the role of controller CFO, but at the same time, that was pretty much straight out of college. So that was kind of like my jump into junior accounting, if you
will. That was a big jump, huh?
It was a big jump. Fortunately, I was able to live up to the job. And as I had mentioned before, too, the being able to get into a business and not only understand the accounting and the financial processes, but how that affects the different components of a business became very invaluable. And from there, the transition into consulting afforded me the opportunity to get involved with multiple different types of business models and different business entities. And through that experience, it's kind of brought, in my opinion, a CFO role as being a consultant role in a lot of ways. I mean, only the accounting and finance portion is a very small portion at the end of the day of what I actually do these days.
So let me ask you, if you can compare the role of the controller versus the role of the CFO, what is that difference? Is the controller also a consultant, if you will, or is it more of a tactical player?
I would say it's more of a tactical player at this point. In a lot of companies today, there's not a controller position necessarily. But in my past experience as assistant controller and a controller, I was more the nuts and bolts guy, and the CFO pretty much flew the top cover and was doing more of the collaborative, the leadership role, and the partnering, if you will, with the different business lines. Now, granted, as a controller, you still interact on a day-in and day-out basis with the different business lines, but it's definitely more of an accounting approach role, if you will.
Yeah, and one of the things that we find as you look through the ever-growing role of that CFO is that more and more responsibilities are coming in play, more regulation. One could argue that is bringing on more risk. And we certainly are finding in the profession that fewer and fewer 20-something-year-olds aspire to that role of the CFO. Do you have a sense of whether you've seen that in your career?
Me personally, I really haven't, given the fact that a lot of the risk that you feel as a CFO these days is more from your shareholders and obviously from the regulation. Given the fact that we're not a publicly traded company, a lot of that risk is mitigated.
So what do you see as the challenge for the CFO, not necessarily you in your company, but the general broad challenges for the CFO, let's say in a privately held company today, what are they?
Sure. A big thing is that the skill sets that a person is required to have these days as a CFO, be a small, big company, public or private, it doesn't really make any difference. There's a lot of pressure these days on the bottom line of a company. And the tools that you need to manage performance or to do performance management, if you will, requires different skill sets, more intuitiveness, if you will, and more insight into an overall business operation and business process.
So going very much away from the bean counter. I mean,
much going away from the bean counter to more of, like I've said, a partnership with the different, business lines and management functionality and so forth. But, you know, there is a component still of the true nuts and bolts accounting, but it's just becoming, you know, less and less, if you will.
Interesting that I don't know that we in the finance profession have very good PR. You speak to the Joe on the street, and Joe will tell you, a CPA or an accountant or a finance person, they're bean counters. We really haven't done a good job on the PR, I don't think.
No, we really haven't. And honestly, in a lot of ways today, the investors are looking more and more to the CFO and their role to provide more information and to be more accountable. And to do that, a CFO becomes more and more of a public relations person, if you will, for a company, and needs to be able to speak to a more layman term for investors to understand what's going on.
So that is a lot of translation, a lot of communication. Hey, we don't learn communication in accounting class, do we?
No, we really don't.
Should we? Do you think that should be part of the accounting course?
It definitely should be. Presentation skills and would definitely be a very beneficial for anybody that wants to get into this type of role.
You know, it's interesting. I've heard recently that many of the top CEOs of today and other C-level executives are taking courses in being a comedian so that they can deal with the financial press, deal with the investors, the analysts, and deal with that, you know, quirk question that comes from left field that they weren't expecting. Do you think we should bring that into the finance function?
Most definitely. Most definitely.
Well, I'll be standing behind you in the queue. I'll let you go up on stage first. Well, one of the things that has obviously happened in the last 10 years is the internet, the role today of every corner you turn. Social media is upon us, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, all, and there probably are many, many sites that I haven't just mentioned. Have you found that the role of social media has impacted the CFO today?
Well, I definitely could say that based on what you see in today's news and in all these different media formats, you know, if a CEO does anything good, you don't hear much about that. But if they mess up, you hear about that definitely. So it's probably put more of a negative connotation, I guess, on the CFO position. A lot of the CFOs these days, especially from a publicly traded viewpoint, have more of a short-term viewpoint. And unfortunately, they're not looking necessarily to grow the business. And that's where I think a lot of the negative connotation comes from.
Understand. And obviously, with sales now being driven from a whole variety of distribution channels, social media is one of those. And it's a very much growing element of that, not only for products, but also for services.
Certainly.
Does your company use social media in terms of your sales reach?
We really don't. Most of our business or most of our sales is through business to business, a lot of federal and state local government. So a lot of it's contract driven.
Tell us a little bit about your products and services and what you do so that we can understand that in context.
Sure. One Vision Solutions is a video conferencing solution provider. Not only do we collaborate with our clients to determine what the best fit for their business or their situation, be it the government or, you know, Army, Navy, and so forth, but we sell the product, the services, and, of course, the maintenance. We do the installation and integration as well, and the training components for that. So essentially, you have your little webcam these days, you know, for your Skype account and so forth. It's essentially that type of deal, but it's on a bigger scale. It's when you walk into your conference room and you have the big plasma screen TVs. It goes across a secured network. You can collaborate with different types of media as well when you're doing your video conferencing.
And you have a focus on federal, state, government, as well as a general consumer base.
And healthcare. and education. Education's a very big area for us as well.
Very unique. Now, what are you seeing in the education market today? I think you're our first guest that's been in the foray of education. What is occurring?
We have contracts with several universities, especially if they have remote campuses, where they'll set up a video conference link into a classroom so the professors don't necessarily have to be on site, and they can essentially reach multiple classrooms in multiple regions within a state.
So do you ever see Harvard being just an internet click away?
You know, it could definitely happen. We're definitely seeing more and more of that with them. We have a state that we work with that's putting in video conferencing in outreach emergency rooms, and they're able to video conference back to the major hospital or the big hospital, and you know, could be 200 miles away, and the doctors can see what's going on with the patients. They can transfer information back and forth about the patient and can help diagnose the situation.
That's a little scary. I'm sitting here in my, patient location, and maybe I'm covered in spots. Does the gentleman know 200 miles away whether it's measles or chickenpox?
I'm not a doctor.
Thank goodness, me neither. Well, let's talk a little bit about the CFO role. You mentioned earlier in your career that you had a very natural aptitude to what you described as models. The CFO role often is including maintenance of systems, the information technology function, and within that, obviously, accounting is a key portion of the information systems. Can you expand upon your role and use of the system based on your experiences?
Sure. I've found in the past that I had a pretty natural knack, if you will, towards being the guy that can speak IT geek talk to the accounting and back and forth. Typically what you wind up having happen is accounting and finance want something, they go to IT and ask for it. They don't ask for it in the right way, so they get information back. It becomes an us-them game, and it becomes a big issue. And I found a niche for myself way back, essentially being that liaison, if you will, between the IT folks and the systems and the accounting and finance functionality. Obviously, that doesn't work very well. There's a lag in the information. And then, of course, data integrity becomes a big issue as well. So in today's world, I find myself leaning more and more towards like an ERP solution that allows me to do performance management at more of a finger click away.
Interestingly enough, when you go into the IT folks' office, they're talking about the accountant geeks.
Exactly. It goes both ways.
And here, again, for the second time, we're talking about communication.
Yep, exactly.
Very key element. So tell us the lessons that you've learned about use of systems. We're going to talk a little bit later about implementing software because you've had a lot of experience in that. But what about use of systems? Is that different today than it was 5 years ago, 10 years ago, and so forth?
I would say so. What I found in the past is that you have multiple systems that you're running off of or multiple platforms. So then you'd have to find some way to make everything talk together. So you typically have something sitting on top of an AS400 box that would allow you to pull a little bit of information from this operating system, a little bit from this operating system over here, and pull something together. And again, going back to data integrity, that's a critical key in my life, is making sure that the information that I'm working with is accurate. So I think we've come a long way, and there's still nuts and bolts systems that are out there, but it's definitely getting better, in my opinion.
And interestingly enough, you often find that whether it's the accountant path that somebody is taking or the analyst path that another person in finance is taking, we all tend to be Excel junkies.
Exactly.
Do you, in your experience, still use Excel or some other form of spreadsheet? I guess I shouldn't say that. They're not a sponsor on the show. But some other form of spreadsheet to be able to collaborate and analyze that data?
Hey, I still reconcile my own checkbook using an Excel spreadsheet. So,
love that.
So, yes, I still live and breathe in Excel.
Love that. Well, let's take some of those lessons and talk about your roles. Recently, you've taken your roles of the love of the technology, and you are actually using the software that our sponsor is promoting, SAP by Design, Business by Design. Tell us a little bit about the product, if you would, and then we're going to step into a little bit about your implementation of the product at One Vision Solutions.
Okay. Let me kind of give you a little bit of a history as to what happened with One Vision Solutions. The company was founded in 2004. Like most companies, went out and bought a copy of QuickBooks off the shelf. And for the first couple of years, that's no problem. The transactional volume on a monthly basis really didn't require a whole lot more than what a off-the-shelf system would bear. As the company began to grow and we started going into different regions and different verticals, it became very apparent that the profit of, or the visibility into the profitability at the product category, the region or the vertical was getting lost.
Yeah, so in that regard, you had some limitations in what was your accounting software package, and you're using some kind of spreadsheet data mining capability. Was it across the board that it wasn't helping you from a performance management, or were there other limitations? For example, were you getting into multiple corporations, legal entities? Was it foreign exchange impact? Or was it just the system can't cope with the level of flexibility that we need for forecasting?
Essentially, the system was very limited for just straight-line visibility into the profitability of the company. From a high level, yes, we had a pretty good idea. We could use Excel spreadsheets to look at regions and so forth using VLOOKUPs and different tools. But it was worse than that, actually. The process was very manual. We had hard copy folders for each transaction that we would do, or each sales transaction. That folder would actually be passed back and forth between two desks about 8 times. And if it's an integration project, these folders could be six to 8 inches thick. And, of course, pieces of paper get lost. There's sticky notes stuck to everything, which those get lost just as easily. A lot of offline spreadsheets for tracking orders, recording shipping data. And, of course, at no point in time was this information very accurate or up to date.
So at some point, I can imagine that your employees and accountants and analysts were saying, please, sir, I need help. It wasn't, please, sir, can I have more porridge? It was, please, sir, can I have a different accounting system?
Exactly. And rather than throwing bodies at it, my philosophy has always been work smart and use the systems that you have. So that kind of led into the need for a new type of solution.
So what did you do? Did you get the QuickBooks guys on the phone and say, hey, does your product take us to the next level, or did you just make the assumption it isn't going to take us there and started evaluating other products?
We made the assumption that it wasn't going to get to where we actually wanted to be. One Vision Solutions is a dropship business model, and we were having to trick the system to allow us to actually do dropship functionality. Didn't really see QuickBooks wanting to go out and design a program to actually truly adhere to a dropship function. And to your point earlier, you're talking about having multiple entities. Well, One Vision Solutions is only one of three of our businesses that we actually have that roll up into a consolidation. We have One Vision Solutions that's a dropship business model. We have a company called Direct Packet Inc. that actually has developed hardware, so we have a third-party manufacturer overseas that actually builds these dummy boxes for us. We bring them into the country. We give them their brains, if you will, through the software that we put into them, and then we sell them. So it's more of a supply chain management model. And then the third company is a true service consulting business. So we needed a system that, one, would allow us 360-degree view of all three companies at once, through a consolidation. And QuickBooks is not capable of doing that kind of
No, and now you're getting
work
into multiple legal entities, pretty rigorous.
Exactly.
Consolidation that potentially has the risks through foreign exchange if you're doing international currencies and that sort of thing.
Exactly.
So tell us about the beginnings. You're looking at a new software. Let's start from base level. Who within your company did you select to be part of the review process?
Let's see. When I came on board, Tom Opsahl is one of the co-owners of OneVision Solutions, and he was running the lead for the accounting and finance function within the company before I came on board. And he had already started doing his homework, and there were multiple software suites that were looked at. And by the time I came on board, I had just recently found out about Business by Design and the fact that it was for small to medium-sized companies. Very dynamic approach to the configuration processes and so forth. So I brought that one to the table. The other one that we looked at was a Mass 500 solution, which I consider that ERP in a box, if you will, versus a SaaS or internet-based solution. And once you start doing the cost analysis for what it would actually cost to bring in like a Mass 500 system versus an on-demand solution, the on-demand solution wins hand down.
So for those of the listeners that are not familiar with on-demand cloud computing, explain what that is and what that means to you as somebody hosting that technology.
Sure. The major selling point, we'll start with that and then I'll kind of work backwards here. Mm. The selling point is I don't have to have an IT support system necessarily to run this shared service. A lot of people know of Salesforce.com, which is essentially an on-demand solution as well. At the end of the day, we go through system upgrades or software upgrades, and I don't have an IT support system that actually puts this in place. SAP, over a weekend, will actually have their army of people update my system, test it for me, and by Monday morning, I come walking back in, and I have a software solution up and running again. With the upgrades.
So right off the front, you have a reduction in cost of whether you need mainframes or other kind of servers. You don't have that cost, and you really don't have the worry of whether it's being backed up or not.
Exactly. Would you like me to go through just a real quick cost analysis for this,
that would be great.
Okay. What we found with the Mass 500 or an ERP in-a-box solution, it was going to cost us about $150,000 just for the implementation itself. Then you take that plus the fact that we were going to have to buy servers and additional software. We're probably running another $10,000 to $15,000 for actual CapEx. The licenses, we were going to be doing four concurrent licenses. And those four concurrent licenses on an annual basis was going to run right at $10,000. Not to mention the fact at that point, then I have to bring in a database administrator. And to find a database administrator that's worth their weight at all, you're spending at least $75,000 on someone that's probably not going to be utilized that much. So my annual cost going forward for only four licenses was going to be pushing $85,000, $90,000.
And that's assuming said person didn't have a sick day.
That's correct. Now, if you looked at the online solution, my implementation was less than $100,000. I have 25 user licenses right now, and it cost me $45,000 a year. You take that in consideration to an annual cost of 85 versus 45, I've already saved money. What we found with the ERP in a box solution is that it wasn't a true full-blown ERP solution. There was still bolt-on associated with that. Given the fact that that solution was also built for many different types of business models, it wasn't customized directly to what we needed. So we had a whole bunch of extra stuff that we didn't really care about, which cluttered the system, in my opinion, versus the Business by Design solution, where we were able to actually go in and fine-tune and configure the system to what we only need. So we don't actually have to look at a whole bunch of extras.
So that $100,000 that you quoted in terms of the implementation for Business by Design, was that including those elements of tailoring it or customizing it to you?
That's part of the way you actually go about setting up the system. You sit down and say, okay, we're a service business. And then you start going through a list of questions and configuring your system based off of questions that it asks you.
So talk to us about the next stage. You've looked at your company. You've taken a review of the different software packages. You've decided that SAP has a good product for you in the stage of growth that you're at. What is the next stage that you took place? Talk us through the implementation, if you will, in a stepped fashion.
Okay. The first thing I did when I came on board with OneVision Solutions, within 10 days, I sat down and mapped out all of our processes, all the business processes.
So physical pen and paper?
On paper. Well, PowerPoint.
Yep. Another Microsoft product, hey? So far in the accounting function, Microsoft's figuring pretty large.
Yeah, right? No, but essentially I sat down and mapped out all the processes. Because unless you understand where you're at today, you don't know where you can improve. So I took essentially all these business processes, took them to Business by Design, and said, okay, this is where we're at. I know we can improve. Now, if you guys can get me to the point where I can actually have profitability and see the profitability at a region and a vertical and a product, we are, you know, a million miles ahead of where we've been. And that was kind of the beginning of the relationship, and from there we took a very collaborative approach. As we went through the sales cycle, we brought the accounting staff in and got buy-in from the accounting staff and had them look at the different work centers and the different components, saying, yes, this will work, no, this won't work, and redesigned and rebuilt our processes around a whole new system.
So in that regard, you're tailoring your process to be more towards that best-in-class.
Correct. Yeah, the big thing is standardize and streamline. I mean, that's kind of my motto, and that's one way that you actually save to your bottom line.
Again, some cost savings.
Exactly.
And probably happier employees.
Exactly.
So tell us a little bit about how long the process of implementing in this on-demand solution took.
We actually went through about a 65% full-blown ERP solution, and we did it in 2 months.
And what does that mean? 65%, what does that mean? Did you implement certain modules?
Exactly. The nice thing about going with an online solution is that we own the whole entire ERP solution, all the different components, but we don't necessarily need them, but we have them. So if our business model changes or we bring in a different type of business model, then we can go in and flip switches and push buttons and activate different parts of the solution that we don't currently use.
Very tailored. So which of those modules within By Design, which of those did you implement? General Ledger, and then what else?
General Ledger, some CRM, SRM, a little bit of HR. Those are the primary ones. As our business model is changing and as we are working right now with Business By Design to make more of a robust dropship business model, we'll actually turn more of the CRM functionality on and ultimately get into service desks and start tracking our work orders and so forth through the system as well. And so, the added benefit to being able to bring in more of the CRM functionality, i.e. the business opportunities and the quoting tools, is that the information that is put into the system only has to be put into the system once as opposed to three times currently. So we'll have more savings, if you will, going forward, allowing us to manage more by exception as opposed to actually having to do day in and day out data input into the accounting system.
Very, very good. This is all the advantages that you get from a fully integrated system well as somebody else hosting it essentially takes the headache away.
And ultimately, what my goal is to see Salesforce actually leave our company and use strictly the Business by Design solution as that tool that Salesforce is currently being used as. So, again, more cost savings.
Wonderful. And how are your users enjoying the new product?
I haven't heard anybody complain, so that's a good thing. Now, granted, we haven't brought the sales guys into it yet. We're waiting until we have more of a true dropship functionality. There's going to be some change management that we have to go through once we get a more robust dropship model in place. So I really didn't see the need to bring in the sales staff yet and have them work in a system knowing that it's going to be changing within 6 months or so.
Sure. Now, some of the better companies that implement accounting packages and other forms of information system software allude to an implementation failure that's pretty frequent in that budgets get tight, time gets tight, and sometimes those overruns occur. And often a result of that is the budget for training and customized reporting may be a couple of the elements that are cut. Talk to us about the training that was involved for your team with that hosted solution. Was it a different kind of a training?
Well, first, the cost of our implementation was a flat rate. So if SAP needed to bring in additional resources, it was on their nickel. So that's a big value add. Now, as for the training, as I mentioned, we had brought the accounting staff in from day one to be a part of the overall approach to an understanding how the system was going to work, what the screens looked like. And during the implementation process, we had a testing period where we were able to put in our own information and see how it was going to work within the business model.
Almost like a parallel run, but a partial parallel.
Exactly. So the day we actually went go live, the staff was already trained.
Very, very good. It takes away some of that critical failure step. So let's talk about the other element, reporting and customized reporting. Did the product, canned reports meet your needs, or did you need to do some customization there?
For the most part, the canned reports and the heads-up display screens that we have available to us answers most of our questions. The nice thing is that most of the reports are cube-based, so you can put stuff in a row or you can make it a column or vice versa. You can drop a lot of information.
Does it look and feel like
what you need?
Does it look and feel like a spreadsheet?
To some degree, yes. So you can make your changes to the report and then download it to Excel if you want to. But it's definitely a cube-based function.
Mm-hmm. I've actually seen the product, so I'm asking some of these questions for you so that the listeners can get a little bit of a reach into the look and the feel. So I apologize for some of those questions because I know the product. but tell me, so now you have this new product, you've got fully trained employees, accounting staff, and further reach within your organization using it, and you've got somebody taking the risk and the costs of all those system maintenance elements, that's now being covered. So now you're back to the day-to-day. Now you're back to, okay, I've got the CFO hat on, and you're looking forward. You talked about the reason for doing this is to get a better look into the various elements of your business and the cash flow and the profitability. How has that changed your forecasting and your look back?
Well, that's the one wonderful thing about One Vision Solutions is from a G&A perspective or normal costs, the numbers are pretty flat. We've had tremendous growth within our payroll, which that's easy to explain. But pretty much there's no surprises. The thing about our sales forecasting is it's a pretty hard business to necessarily forecast forward, but we know when certain industries or certain verticals and regions are going to be picking up. I mean, case in point, when you start dealing with the federal government, you know Q3 is going to be a really good quarter. Q2 is a good quarter because of education, because during the summertime, that's when schools do most of their work. So we have a pretty good idea of where we're going to see the business spikes. And the nice thing is by being in multiple verticals like this, one may go down, but we have another one that's going to be coming right back up or ramping up at that point in time as well. So we've definitely kept a very controlled approach on our sales. We could easily go out and blow our numbers completely out of the water. Not that exponential growth is, a bad thing, but we're trying to maintain our growth position.
Sure. And as you grow the business, do you think that business by design will help you, whether it's through organic growth, potentially acquisition, or something else? Is it able to help you step up?
I would definitely say so. That's one of my selling points from Business by Design, is that it's a very dynamic system, and as we are changing, it can change with us. And that was a very, very, very important point to us.
Yes. So, now, in terms of that forecasting, do you now have new key metrics that you put in place regarding, you said the, initially the look back, you looked at changing your processes, you looked at being a better in class company to manage that, that forecasting. Do you actually have new key performance indicators, or is it just now you can drill?
It's more the fact that we can drill deeper into the information. We definitely have a better cash forecasting than we've had in the past through our sales order pipelines. That's been pretty critical. We can definitely look a month to 2 months down the road and have a pretty good idea of what kind of vendor payments we're going to be dealing with and so forth.
And what about the balance sheet? Talk to us a little bit about the controls on the balance sheet and how the system is helping you with that. Are there any? Does it use specifically control accounts such that certain accounts are blocked off? I'm familiar with also with the larger SAP modules. So perhaps if you could compare some of that balance sheet analytics.
The one big change, I guess, from the QuickBooks days is the fact that we're now using clearing accounts, which getting your head around that sometimes is a little bit more difficult. There's more batch control, if you will, around goods and services receipts and so forth, that we essentially automate those processes at the end of the month or once a week, depending on what we want to look at. But really, that's been the only big change, I guess, from the balance sheet perspective. In a lot of ways, I'm still pretty old school. When it comes to journal entries, I make most of the journal entries directly against the balance sheet outside of the operational accounts.
I think that's music to my ears. I'm very old school too, so yeah, I'm right there with you. So we've talked a lot about the change. Looking back on the experiences, it seems as if it's been very effective, very cost a strong cost solution for you. Was it hard to go to your owners and say, we need to do this? And whether you were asking for $100,000 or $150,000, that's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money. And one of my jokes that I usually say is whenever I went to the owners of the company, Ned and Tom, and said, hey, guys, we need to go to talk with SAP. They have this new solution called Business by Design. They looked at me like I had two heads. Because they're thinking R3, you know, they're thinking millions of dollars in 2 years, and you know, we're going to lose all of our information, and it's been quite the contrary to that. Once we sat down and saw what the vision was as to where SAP wanted to take the Business by Design solution itself, we figured pretty quick that they are pretty much in the same type of business and are looking at business the same way we are. So we felt that was a very good relationship for us going forward.
So it was a little bit more managerial and strategic than, hey, I'm the new guy, I need to spend money.
Right, right. And, you know, amazingly enough, most people think of SAP, they think of this great, big, massive company. It is. But the approach that they're taking with Business by Design is that they don't want to see this fail. And we had some questions regarding the dropship functionality. Back in December, we had 8 or 9 people show up in our office from Germany and all around the United States to sit down and literally map out what we said the dropship functionality should look like. I can't think of too many major companies like an SAP that would actually show up on your doorstep and say, okay, explain this to us. We want to understand it. We want to make this a better product.
That is quite something. I'm very surprised myself. I must say I've implemented the R3 previous and I think all of its competitors, and I myself have been an advocate of SAP. I'm very glad to have them as sponsors of the show, and it sounds as if you also are very glad. Had you used any SAP product previous to this?
I never have. So I kind of went off on blind faith myself, but I guess that, you know, going back to the risk of being a CFO, well, sometimes you take your risk.
I hear you on that one. And you still got a job and you're still getting a paycheck. So I think things
exactly.
are good, right? Well,
exactly.
As we look at your company, you're privately held. One of the last elements that I'd like to talk to you about today is that many entrepreneurs, as they start up the business and many CFOs that are brought in, you said that you were a new CFO to the company. Very often that can be the first step to We want to grow bigger. We want to grow smarter. We want to grow in a controlled fashion. And of course, that entrepreneur often wants to go public. What do you see today as the pros and cons? You've been with public, you've been with privately held companies. What do you see as the pros and the cons of public versus private? And perhaps more importantly than that, at what stage in a company's life cycle do you think that you should consider that change?
Okay. Whenever I saw this question, I was laughing because I was thinking to myself, you know, aspire to go public. And my question is why? Kind of going back to the whole regulation process, I mean, that's just one area that really spreads an accounting staff very thin, as well as the CFO. And a lot of companies are actually going private just because of the fact that the regulations that are associated with it and the costs associated with being public really don't outweigh the benefit anymore. So, you know, I'm probably the wrong guy to ask about why you'd want to go public.
Well, actually, I think from our conversations, this is part of why I had put in the question, because I hear a lot of CFOs saying, well, hey, why would we want to do that? We're growing very well. Sales are focused. We have been able to achieve the funding. And part of why I think that question is very important, particularly in a down economy, we've seen through the down economies in the last 100 years or so, that the entrepreneur has a very good knack of self-funding. And
exactly.
Prices are depressed. Share prices today, they're fluctuating. The CFO, my goodness, often is the first one to be hauled away into jail. But that person isn't necessarily the one that impacts the share price volatility.
Exactly. And to your point about the true story behind One Vision Solutions is Direct Packet Inc. was actually the initial company, which is the R&D for these firewall traversal boxes that we are just now taking to the market. And I say just now taking to the market, this company's been around since 2004, so it takes a while. So Ned and Tom had come from the video conferencing industry from the Tandberg side, which is actually one of our biggest vendors. And to fund the Direct Packet Inc. business, they started up One Vision Solutions because they know they could go out and sell video conferencing, and there's good margins in it. So we were able to fund the Direct Packet and at the same time grow this One Vision Solutions into a very profitable company in 6 years. And I'm proud to say that at this point in time, we have no debt.
Well, maybe
outside
after
of
this,
operational debt.
Maybe after this radio show, you'll have a couple of private investors knocking on your door to see if they can be part of the solution.
You never know.
Help you grow. Well, it's been a pleasure speaking with you, Brent. I have one last question. We've got a tradition on this show to ask each of our guests, what is your CFO tip of the month?
A big thing to me is, you know, truly understanding the business processes that drive your business. And the importance of that goes not only to how you can go about helping the different business lines and the different functional management areas within the company, is you have to understand their pain points. You have to understand what part of the overall process doesn't work or does work for them best. So by understanding the processes and mapping those out, you not only make yourself a better service provider within the organization, but you also can dramatically affect your bottom line within the organization as well.
Wonderful. That's a great tip. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
In wrap-up, Brent, it has been a pleasure speaking with you today. Thank you very much to Brent Walters for sharing his innermost thoughts on the role of the CFO. We'd also like to thank our contributors, Chief Executive Magazine, and to our sponsors, Delaney Consulting, providing CFOs and controllers to Fortune 1000 companies, as well as small business. For more information about Delaney, go to www.delaneyllc.com. And thank you also to SAP Business by Design, the software as a service business management solution for small to medium-sized companies. For more information about the product, go to www.sap.com. This and other thought leadership about today's CFOs available right from your computer at cforadio.com. Thank you for listening to CFO Radio. This is Lorraine Chilvers signing off until next time.